Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark Arlepage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here. Welcome back to another episode of the Entrepreneur Architect Podcast. I am your host, Mark R. LePage, and this is episode 7. Pat Flynn graduated from UC Berkeley Architecture. He loved the profession, and he was working his way through the ranks to become an architect. And he was living his dream until the day he was let go. Today on the Entrepreneur Architect Podcast, Pat tells his story about how he made the decision to leave the profession to follow his newly acquired passion for internet business. Today, he makes more than $50,000 per month through his multiple online businesses, including his very popular blog, smartpassiveincome.com. He shares his thoughts on how architects can apply the lessons that he's learned building his online businesses, and he tells a story about how small choices lead to big things. So I hope you enjoy my conversation with Pat. Here's the interview. Hey, Pat, thanks for joining me on the Entrepreneur Architect Podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me, Mark. Appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure. You have a great story, a really interesting story, one that I think architects will find fascinating. Not too long ago, you were in a very similar position to some of the listeners of this podcast as architects, someone who's kind of had a dream as a younger person and worked your way up through the ranks. And so I'd like you to kind of tell that story, but not just your typical story, but get a little bit further back. Maybe when you became aware of the idea of what architecture was and when you decided to become an architect. And so tell that kind of the true origin story as an architect and work your way up to where you are today.
Sure. I mean, it's funny because I've done a lot of interviews before about my story. And I always start with, oh, well, I graduated college and then this. So I'm going to go back further. So this is really cool. Thank you for asking me that. I don't really get to talk about it very much. I guess I'll start with when I applied for college. Actually, I didn't know I wanted to be an architect until I applied. And it's really sort of funny how I got into it. You know, I always was into building things and taking things apart and putting them back together. I played with Legos and Lincoln Logs and Kinects when I was a kid. But the real reason I got into architecture was because of how competitive I knew it was going to be to get into the top school that I wanted to get into, which was UC Berkeley. And I actually wanted to go into the sciences. But all my friends were going for it, and I just did a lot of research on it and heard that it was probably one of the most competitive sort of majors to sort of get into and apply for. So I looked at sort of a second option, and I saw architecture on the list. And I don't even know if you know, some, if admissions bases their selection process on what major you pick. I don't even know that, but I just felt more comfortable doing something a little bit less, what I thought was less competitive. And so I selected architecture, and I thought, hey, that might be kind of cool. I'll try a couple of the first, you know, courses and see what it's like, and I can always make a switch afterwards. And so I went to actually a sort of before school started sort of orientation for architects and just got into that world and met a lot of the professors that I was going to have classes by if I were to go down that route. And I loved it. It just was so interesting to me. And then after I took a couple of my first courses, you know, intro to architecture and, you know, the history and all that stuff, I just fell in love with it. And I loved it. And then I took my first studio course, Architecture 100A. This is at UC Berkeley, at good old Worcester Hall, which is the ugliest building on campus, but it's very functional. You know, that's the joke they always made. And, you know, I loved it. I loved studio. I lived in studio. I also did marching band at the same time. So I had sort of two lifestyles in college. I had my marching band lifestyle and also my architecture lifestyle. And, you know, I just enjoyed the process so much. It was just so different than what everyone else was doing, studying from books and doing that. I mean, I got to build models. I got to draw a lot. The one thing about UC Berkeley that I sort of realized when I was sort of getting ready to graduate was that we didn't do anything with computers. I mean, it was so, I don't know if they still do it that way, but back then everything was hand-drawn, everything. We didn't even touch a computer. It wasn't even required to touch a computer at UC Berkeley to graduate, which was very interesting because when I finally did graduate, you know, I had no computer experience. So it was very tough for me to sort of find a position, even an entry-level position, because I had no CAD experience. So I was looking around at some, you know, potential courses around the area to take to sort of just educate myself a little bit on CAD, you know, sort of right as the moment as I was graduating. And then because of my connection in the marching band, I actually got invited to this dinner at Momo's Cafe, which is in San Francisco. And the owner was in the marching band. He invited sort of the top executives in the marching band. I was a student director at the time to come out for dinner, and he wanted to meet us all. And at dinner, he asked each and every one of us, so what is your major and sort of what do you want to do in life? And it came around to me, and he said, oh, well, my major is architecture. And he's like, oh, well, what do you want to do? What kind of architecture? And I was like, oh, well, I'm actually really interested in, you know, restaurant design and hospitality and things like that. And he was like, oh, well, actually, the guy who built this restaurant is one of my best friends. He also went to Berkeley. He's a Cal alum. Let me see if I can give him a call for you. And I was like, oh, okay, that sounds pretty interesting. But I didn't really think anything of it because, you know, people say that all the time. And, you know, I was just, we were having dinner. That wasn't why I was there. But the next day I got a call from the principal at this firm in Alameda, which is just over the water. And I got my first position. And I thought it was just really interesting that even though I didn't even have real CAD experience, that through a connection I had, I was able to land the job. And so that just really taught me from the beginning how important building relationships are and making these connections with people who you might not even want or think about considering having a relationship with. So that's what taught me that. And then it was very difficult at first because I didn't have that CAD experience. So I would stay at work, sort of just learning from people, you know, watching over the shoulder of people, just trying to learn as much as I could. I would stay after work. I would go home and do AutoCAD on my computer, which is like kind of insane, I know. But I just wanted to learn really fast. And I picked it up relatively quickly. But a lot of the people at the firm saw that I had sort of these skills in Photoshop. So I was actually put not in the design team, but I was on a project, but I was sort of in charge of being the liaison between the design team and sort of the plans for this particular project. We were working on a bunch of restaurants, P.F. Chang's restaurants, actually. And so what I would do at first was I would scan materials and things like that and then put them into Photoshop and then, you know, take the elevations that we had and sort of bring them to life. And then I started to learn about SketchUp and V-Ray and all these other programs to make, you know, 3D renderings of these spaces. Then, you know, things were going really, really well. I got promoted to senior drafter at that point. Once my skills started to develop, then I started taking all these, I wanted to be an architect, so I wanted to get my license. However, I also knew that in order to climb the rankings in the corporate world and to impress my bosses, I needed to sort of do something different than what other people were doing. So I looked at something else called the LEED exam, which a lot of you probably know. And, that was a real struggle for me. I hadn't studied really hard for a couple of years at that point. And to get back into study mode, it was just not working for me at all. Like, I remember taking a practice test for the lead exam and getting like a 25% on it. And, I was like a 4.22 student, and to get 20, like, it was very, depressing to me, right, to get that. That's such a low score. So I tried to discover ways to really understand this information. I mean, there's just so much there. And I had experience with a blog, actually. And sort of one day I just put two and two together. I said, hey, why don't I create a website that will manage all this content for me? Putting it on the website will force me to pull out all the best stuff that I need to memorize. It allows me to make connections between certain things by linking to each other and tagging in different categories, just to organize this information. So that's what I did. And for about a year, actually, I spent, 2-3 hours a day studying and putting information onto this website just for me and a couple coworkers who were there with me, that we were all studying for the lead exam together. In March of 2008, I passed the exam, and everything was going well. I just let the site sit there. I didn't really, I didn't need it anymore because I passed the exam. And I actually got promoted to job captain at that point. I was the youngest person in the firm to get promoted to job captain, because I think they just saw I was doing so much extra work and going above and beyond what, the call of duty. And then summer of 2008 came around. As a lot of architects know, the economy went down, and a lot of us went down with it. And so I got pulled into the office, and they sat me down and they said, Pat, you're one of the youngest, brightest guys we know. We have to let you go. And that just like blew me away, and really was like a punch to the gut that I wasn't even I was sort of, I saw signs, a lot of people in the office were sort of dropping, right, like flies, but I had done so much hard work. I thought I was going to be one of the ones to stick it out with them. And when they told me I was one of the youngest, brightest guys, I thought they were like just being like, going to tell me like, okay, well, we'll get through it. We might have to do a pay cut, or we might have to, lower your hours, but they just cut me off. And that was definitely a life-changing moment for me. I mean, I had done everything right up to that point, I thought, and I still got let go. And after sort of the initial depression, and I had just asked my girlfriend to marry me, and she said yes. We were trying to figure things out. I actually moved back home with my parents in San Diego, and I commuted from San Diego to Irvine, which is almost 100 miles away, every day. Oh. Because when I got let go, I was still in charge of a few projects, so I had a buffer time of maybe 2 or 3 months just to complete those. So I actually had like an end date. And going to work each day, which is so tough because I knew that it wasn't going to be there much longer. I would actually go on the train and watch all these people come in the train and just be jealous of them, because I was like, oh, you guys are so lucky. You have a job. Like, this isn't going to be like this for me forever. And then something cool happened after I almost overslept one of my stops on the train and decided to switch from listening to music to podcasts. I discovered a podcast called Internet Business Mastery, which is still around today. And at the time, it was the top business podcast. And I just started listening to it and getting really motivated about what some people were doing out there to sort of make a life for themselves and earn an income. And there was one particular show from a guy named Cornelius Fitchner, who runs a business about the project management exam. He makes a living, six figures actually, by teaching people how to pass a project management exam. And that's when a light bulb went off for me. Because I had this lead site that I created. I didn't do anything with it, but I had that resource, and I thought maybe I could do sort of what Cornelius did. And interestingly enough, I started to get really motivated about online business and started reading all about it and researching it. And the first thing I learned was, well, if you have a website, you need traffic to come to it. And the first thing I did was I put an analytical tool on the site to get ready for the traffic that I was going to hopefully get. I didn't know how I was going to get it. The next day, I think it was 4,000 or 5,000 people registered as a visitor on that site. People from around the world in one day.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous. Like, it scared me at first. I thought maybe all those visits were from me. I don't know. I just was like, and then they were from 31 different countries around the world, and it just blew my mind. And then I opened up the comments, and people started asking questions that I actually knew some of the answers to. And I didn't know all the answers. I still had to help people by looking stuff up. But then I sort of just quickly evolved into this expert in this industry, you know, the helping people pass a lead exam. And I didn't consider myself an expert, but I learned over time that I was the expert to them in their eyes because I knew a little bit more than they did. And I had that experience that I could share. And so I got really involved with trying to help these people pass this exam. And it worked out because I actually connected with a bunch of people who had internet businesses already, and they sort of guided me along the way. And they shared that I should publish an ebook, you know, a study guide for the people who were coming, just to make it even easier for them to pass the exam. And I did that. I launched that book in October of 2008, which is right at the time my layoff was actually officially going to happen. And that first month I launched that ebook, I had made $7,908.55 from one $19.99 ebook. And it just changed everything for me.
Was that the point where you decided to let go of the idea of being an architect and move into internet business?
Yeah, I mean, it's for one, it was just so awesome to see, of course, that money come in. But secondly, I think the coolest part was a lot of the people who purchased that book didn't need it. A lot of people who had purchased that book already passed the exam. They just emailed me and said, you know, I wanted to give back to you from all that you gave to me. So this is my way of giving back now that you came out with this book, which I wish you did a long time ago. And I thought that was so cool. And to get that sort of immediate response from people for something that I did was so fulfilling. It's something I've never really experienced before as far as business is concerned. I mean, as an architect, I would work on a project, maybe even just a small segment of a project, and then it would go out there and it would be built. But then, I mean, if you think about the buildings that you're in now or the buildings that you walk through each day, you don't really know who that architect is typically. But here I was helping people pass a LEED exam, something so small, and a lot of people I talk to about this don't even know what LEED is. People are emailing me with these incredible messages of thanks and sending me handwritten thank you notes. I mean, that's just so cool. And you know, the income started to go up. I started to add more products to the site, practice exams and an audio guide. And the coolest part about the online business world that and the way I built this, and it was very inspired by Tim Ferriss, the 4-Hour Workweek that I read on the train, actually, on the way up and back down sometimes, was that it was semi or almost mostly automated. So people can come to the site, purchase an ebook, an electronic book, get it delivered to them automatically after purchase, and you know, I don't have to be there in order for that transaction to happen. And that just, again, was another way that my mind was blown from this whole world that I didn't even know existed before. And so, like, really, I mean, it's not 100% hands-off, and I want to make sure I make that clear. And it wasn't an overnight success as much as it sounds like it. I mean, that site was alive, and I was working on it for like a year before I discovered all this traffic was coming in and began to monetize it. But just the fact that I don't have to trade my time for that income, and I can walk away a little bit or have a really flexible schedule, but that business can continue to run. So it's not service-based in a way where I, you know, if I stop working, the business stops working. The business can continue to work for me instead of the other way around, which I think is really cool. And that's sort of how I got the real turning point, and when I actually knew when I wasn't going to go back into architecture, was not when all that money was coming in. It was when I got a call from my boss, my ex-boss. And he had branched off and started his own firm, took a bunch of the people from the firm that were also let go with him, which I thought was really cool because they all had work again. He asked me to come back. He said, "Hey, we have a seat for you here. We're gonna pay you more money. We'll pay for your move, everything. Just come back, please." And I happily said no. And that's when I knew that it just, you know, my life was on a different path at that point. And
so there was no decision, really no thought to make that decision. It was an instant decision.
It was an instant decision. And there were a lot of factors behind that. Obviously the money was good, but it was more what this sort of business allowed me to do. What else with my life, you know, right. Be with my family or from being with my family. And now I have two kids, I'm able to stay at home with them now, and watch all their firsts. But I mean, to going to Target at 2 p.m. when nobody's there except a bunch of other moms who, you know, give you funny looks because you're the only dude in there. But, you know, no parking, no lines. It's just the flexibility that sort of lifestyle gives you is just amazing. But I will say I do miss architecture. It is lonely sometimes. You know, I do work from home and my family's here and I love them, of course, but you know, I don't have the water cooler to talk. I don't have the people in the cubicle next to me to talk to. It's very tough to get the same feeling of working as a team on a project. I've only recently started to build an actual team behind the business that I run. For a while, it was just me, you know, as a solopreneur, and that's tough at times. And luckily, I have things like Skype to talk to people like yourself, Mark, and other of my colleagues. You know, we run ideas off of each other. But there are a lot of things I miss about architecture. I guess the only thing I actually do now that relates to it is Photoshop. Photoshop. I use Photoshop almost every day in my online business now, creating graphics and stuff. But it's definitely different. And I, you know, this might sound weird, but I do miss AutoCAD too.
Yeah.
Although I think everyone's using Revit now, right?
Yeah, a lot of them are moving to Revit. Yeah. Talk a little bit about your business today. You know, describe a little bit more about what you do today.
Sure.
And how it works.
Sure. Well, I mean, that website is still up and generating an income month. I typically spend maybe 1 to 2 hours a month on it just to make sure it's still working fine, it's up to speed, and that the information is up to date, and that customers are getting their emails answered, and there's very little of them. So that website is still there. You can find that at greenexamacademy.com. You can see my picture there. And so that's working really well. I also have a site that I built in the security guard training industry, sort of the same idea, just providing information for people who want to know how to become a security guard. And that's at securityguardtraininghq.com. That makes $2,000 to $3,000 a month virtually just off of advertisements that people click on that site. My main business now is at smartpassiveincome.com, where I talk about these things and I sort of show people examples of how I build these businesses. And you know, I'm very transparent about it. I just show everything that happens along the way, from everything that goes right to everything that goes wrong, so that anybody out there who might want to try the same thing, you know, I don't promise anything. I don't say you'll get rich overnight, and I actually say you will not get rich overnight, or even in 6 months or a year. It takes a long time. But I try to be an example for people. I sort of become the crash test dummy in online business and try new things and see what happens and just report on it. That's how securityguardtraininghq.com was built. I built that from scratch and, you know, in X number of days, got it to number one in Google, started making money. And I'm actually in the middle of doing another one right now in the food truck industry.
I read that.
Publicly. And I'm really excited about this one, actually. There's been high demand for another, you know, step-by-step over-the-shoulder case study, and I think this is perfect because that other one was done 2 years ago, and a lot of things have changed as far as how business online is done, and also specifically how Google ranks websites. And so that'll be really fun. I also have an iPhone application company that was started back in 2009 as an experiment just to see if it was a viable passive income opportunity. And because we got in relatively early, my business partner and I, for that business, we've done really well, actually. We consistently have for the last 2 years, the market's been really tough, and there's a lot of competition. So we've been earning maybe $2,000 to $4,000 a month for the last 2 years without doing anything, actually. And that's pretty cool. Back when we first started, we were making up to $10,000 a month from the apps that we had. And so it's just so cool, the opportunities that are out there. When I built my security guard training site, I had hired somebody on a site called Odesk to help develop a clickable map, because in the security guard industry, every state in the U.S. has a sort of different set of rules or requirements. And so I thought it would be cool if there was some tool on the site that people can go to and click on their state to see what those requirements might be, or to take them to a page where those requirements might be. And after I built that tool, you know, I spent about $300 to $400 to have, you know, to outsource that and have someone build it. After I put it on the site, and of course, because I share that on smartpassiveincome.com, everyone's like, how did you make that map? And I would originally give people the contact I had for the developer to create their own map in their own industry. But then I figured, hey, why don't I just create a tool that can help people do this, where they can just enter the URLs and click a button, and then boom, code comes out that they can put on their site to sort of create the same exact map that I had with their material or their links. And so I built that. You can find that at createaclickablemap.com. And people can go there and set it up and actually get a map for free if they want in the U.S. But you can save the information so you can go back and edit it later for $10 lifetime. And so that makes $20-$30 a day, which is pretty – I mean, it's just so cool, like all these little opportunities that you might find.
So you got a pretty significant income coming in with all those businesses. Yeah. With all those numbers you just talked about. Quite a bit of money.
They do. I'm currently generating between $40,000 and $60,000 a month from all of them combined.
A little more than you would have as an architect.
A little bit more. but, you know, a lot of it is coming from smartpassiveincome.com now through affiliate marketing, which is earning a commission by recommending other people's products to people. And if they sort of go through your affiliate link, you'll get a referral commission as a result of that. And I think that's... you know, traditionally in internet marketing, that's a very sort of negative, it has a very negative connotation. People abuse the power of just being able to find a product, get a link, and share it with their audience. That's why it has that negative connotation. I've sort of really taken that and spun it on its head and said, you know what, I'm only going to recommend products that people will find useful, ones that I've used myself, and I can show people exactly how to use them, which a lot of people weren't doing when sort of recommending products. And so that's what's been the primary income generator, recommending things like domain and hosting or tools to conduct keyword research from services like the one I mentioned on Odesk. Like, I get a small referral fee when I refer people through my link to that service. So it's all stuff that's helpful. It's just, you know, I give people the opportunity to go through my links, and then that pays me back in return at no extra cost to those people. So, you know, I feel like the more I can give away, just like this niche site dual stuff that I'm doing right now, the more I get back in return, because people want to reciprocate when they get all that information for free. It's just so cool, the opportunities that are out there. I'm very, very lucky that things happened the way they did. Although at first when I got laid off, I was, you know, probably the bottom of the world, just down in the dumps. But it actually turned out to be a blessing in disguise. It really just opened up my eyes to other opportunities that were available. And, you know, I don't think, and I never recommend people to just straight up quit. But I feel like I recommend people to open their eyes a little bit to other opportunities that might be out there. And it could be opportunities, you know, within the business that you're in already or the job that you're working at. You never know. I mean, I know a guy named Ramit Sethi. He has a website, great website, and a book called IWillTeachYouToBeRich.com. You know, despite how crazy that URL sounds, he's actually got some good information about, you know, starting side businesses, but also sort of the business that you're in or the job that you're working at to, you know, how to get a raise and things like that. And, you know, that little bit of income extra that comes in can make a big difference. And if you can just find opportunities within the job that you have to, you know, take things to the next level, that those sorts of opportunities will come your way. So I don't know, I'm just really fortunate and I'm always wanting to give back.
Oh, audio's out.
And we're back.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
No problem.
I got too excited.
that's because you're on the Entrepreneur Architect podcast.
Yeah.
It happens all the time. Don't worry.
I'm so happy to share my story.
Yeah. One of the reasons I had you on is, you know, not only because of your background in architecture and kind of taking it in a completely different direction, but your story is probably very inspirational to not only people who want to get into internet business, but to architects who are sort of in that same position. I want to kind of get into a little bit about, you know, that moment where you decided that you were going to go from architecture and leave it to become, you know, internet business guru. Sure. You also have a new book out. You didn't mention your new book. You have a book called Let Go, and which I read and is a great book. I highly recommend it to everybody.
Thank you, Mark.
But what I love about it are the videos that are in it. And talk a little bit about how the snippet works and why the Kindle book is different than a typical book.
Yeah, well, you mentioned the Snippet app, which is a brand new platform for iOS, for iPhone and iPad, that sort of changes the reading experience a little bit. It sort of takes it to the next level. It becomes multimedia. And I had the opportunity to be one of the first authors on this platform, connecting with the sort of people behind that startup. And so I took that opportunity and I wrote my story there. And I had the story in the back of my head all the for a really long time. And, you know, I've told this story before, but never was I able to have the opportunity to share it like I would on this particular platform, with not just text, but with video, with audio, with images, and also what's cool about this particular application is it incorporates social media like right into the book too. So in some of the chapters, you can see a hashtag conversation around the topics that we're talking about, and other people who are reading the book as well, and you're able to interact with them through the book, which is really cool. The videos were so cool to create. There are some interviews with people who had a major influence on the decision to go down this path. My wife, of course, is in there. And then also an interview with my dad, who originally told me I should go back to school to get my graduate degree in architecture.
Your interview with your dad was the reason I emailed you to ask you to be on the podcast. Because I think sometimes parents who have kids who go to school and go to architecture school, sometimes that dream of becoming an architect is stronger in the parents than it is in the people going. And I wanted to talk to you a little bit about, how your parents felt about you leaving architecture for internet business and how difficult that was for them.
Well, I mean, the interview's in Let Go, but, my dad wanted me to initially go back to grad school because, I had spent 4.5 years getting an education in architecture that they paid for. It was difficult for them, I'm sure, but difficult for me because I knew that they'd done that. But that's not the path that I wanted to go down. So that communication, was really important between us. Although what the struggle was for me with my dad was, he's always right. He's always been right. And when he recommended that I go to grad school to get a graduate degree, that I would come out of it more educated with possibly most likely a better salary, and the job market would potentially come back by then, which, some can argue it hasn't even really fully come back yet. He was right. He was totally right. But I knew that wasn't the right path for me, just because I was just so devastated about how hard I had worked and then got kicked out. Like, I had followed the path before. I had done the right thing before, and it just wasn't right for me. To go back and do the right thing again wasn't right for me, I knew. So that, and luckily my dad, he says what's on his mind. But he also is very supportive of the decisions I make. And the really nice thing that I don't think was really talked about in the interview was, he always said that, no matter what path I go down, that, they would always be there to support me, whether it's just through moral support or actually like a house to live in. And I was living at the house at the time when I was transitioning. It's very difficult. I can imagine family is hard. And, one of the struggles I know for people starting an online business, just because I talk to people so much about this, is the external factors like friends and family who may not believe in you or may try to defend themselves and what they're doing by putting you down. That's tough. That is really tough. And that is what sadly stops a lot of people from A, doing what they want, but also B, allowing them to help other people who might benefit from what they have to offer. Like, we don't even know who might have to benefit from what those of you watching or listening to this have to offer. Excuse me. So there's that. And my advice, it's actually a good analogy is the bucket of crabs. Now, if you take a bucket of crabs and you put it somewhere, no crabs will ever come out, because once one tries to climb up and over the edge, the other ones will grab on and pull them back down. So we live in a world of a bucket of crabs. And the best thing that I could do is, if they're friends and they're really just pulling, if it's friends and you're struggling with them because they keep putting you down, I mean, maybe they shouldn't be your friend. If they're your true friend, they would support you no matter what, I would think. But if it's family, of course, you can't just leave your family. If you're in that situation, it's best just to avoid talking about those things that are just going to get both of you fired up. I mean, just avoid it or ignore it. And then beyond that, and probably the best thing that's helped me, and this is for anybody in any industry doing anything, even if it's not online business or online business internet marketing related, is just to find people who have the same mindset as you and just hook up with them and talk to them and sort of mastermind together. That's what it's called, at least in my industry, is forming a mastermind group of people with like-minded goals, like-minded values, that you could just throw ideas off of each other and help each other out and be there as a resource and as a shoulder to lean on and it's just motivation and someone to hold you accountable. I'm actually in three different mastermind groups, each of them with four or five people. We meet each week And what we do is, how this is formatted is, in the beginning, in the first 10 minutes, we each talk about something awesome that happened the past week. And it just gets us all fired up, and also makes us during the week want to do something to be able to bring to that conversation. But then secondly, and probably the most important part, is what's called the hot seat. So one person every week is in the hot seat, and that person will ask the rest of the group for advice on something, or talk about something that they're working on and see if there's an opinion about that, or, you know, just getting help from everybody else. And everyone contributes, and it's awesome. It's just so synergistic. And then at the end, we talk about the goals that we want to accomplish by next week. And that just keeps happening every single week. And I don't want to let those people down. And I know they don't want to let me down either. So we all just lift each other up. And I think there's nothing better than having people like that in your life. And if they're not in your immediate network or of friends or in your family, and then you have to go out there and find them and put yourself in places where people like that exist, and just connect with them. Even, you know, and all the mastermind groups I'm in are virtual. They're not, you know, I don't meet with them in person, just because we're all from different parts of the world.
Yeah.
So I mean, that's probably the best advice I could give to anyone who wants to just, you know, have some help or you know, make progress.
If you did continue on to become an architect, so say you got to that point and you followed your dad's advice, uh-huh, and you went back to grad school and you ended up becoming an architect, but you still had all the knowledge that you have today, you know, running your internet businesses. So you've gained all that knowledge, but
that's interesting, actually.
What would you say, you know, how would you apply that to the business of architecture now? Because a lot of people, pretty much everybody who's listening to this podcast are architects. And what I'd like to do is try to take what you know and apply it to the business of architecture. How would you have done that if you had done that?
All right, this is interesting. Okay, so I go to grad school.
Yep.
Maybe go back to the marching band. I don't know. And then graduate and get a graduate degree. And then what I would want to do is probably just start my own firm, you know, from there right on out, and immediately find something that differentiates myself from everybody else. You know, something, what I like to call, or I didn't create this term, but it's the unfair advantage. What would be my unfair advantage that clients can only get from me? What is that? And I would just tap the heck out of it, meaning just milk it. That is me. That is my brand. That is what people go to me for. And that's what people will talk about with other people. That's how things spread virally. I mean, for me, my online business, it was, you know, I saw what was out there already. So I did the research. I looked at everybody, you know, I'm talking about Smart Passive Income specifically. And I definitely wasn't the first person to create a website about online business and entrepreneurship. I was probably the millionth or the 100 millionth. But I looked for holes, and I found what most people were doing. And I said, hey, this is what everyone's doing. I'm going to do the exact opposite. And that made a lot of noise. And what that was just becoming 100% transparent about everything, actually revealing my income. Nobody was doing that. And that is what put me on the map. So I would take those same sort of ideologies into the architecture firm that I had. And really beyond that, I think it's important to truly have a connection with those people who you're working with, your clients. You know, they are what makes your business go. So go above and beyond to make them happy and surprise them. You know, that's one thing I think I've learned is people appreciate a surprise, even the small surprises, from how organized things might be at the beginning, or maybe, I don't know, I would meet with a client and just, I don't know, take them out to dinner and then surprise them with a little origami thing that just has my business address on it. I don't know. Obviously, this takes some time to think of. Sure. But, you know, just, again, making yourself stand out and being memorable. Even before you actually start those businesses with those clients, to differentiate yourself from there and become a personality also. You know, there are world-renowned firms out there that, you know, their personality, people know them for specific reasons. They're like, their firm in of itself is like a person that people know because they design like this, or they have this way of doing things, or, you know. So I would really make sure that I have my own personality, because people connect with people. You know, you run a business, but it's the people connecting with you that are going to take your business to the next level. So I would really make sure to focus on the people part of it too. And also, I think people just appreciate, you know, I mean, the client architect relationship is a very long process. And, you know, a lot of times I know from my previous experience, there would be moments where I wouldn't even, or the project managers wouldn't even really connect with those people who really mattered in their clientele, because we worked with a lot of developers and things like that. So there's a lot of people involved. But, you know, really just checking in with people every once in a while and showing them that you care. I think that goes a really long way, and that's not very hard to do. Let's see, what else? I wouldn't have a Flash website, that's for sure. gosh, there's just so many. Let's see, I have to like imagine myself doing this with my team. You know, I'd hire people more so just based on the personalities than their actual skills, I think. I think that is very important to have that really close-knit team in order to get things done and to really respect them for who they are and also have them contribute too. One of the things that bothered me when I started was I didn't really feel like I had a say in anything. My job was just to put drawings on AutoCAD and that's it. And, you know, I could have enjoyed that. And I did that first just because I was learning, but you know, when you think about Zappos.com and Tony Hsieh and the sort of environment that he's created there, people love to answer customer service questions. That's what they are about, above and beyond customer service. That's the sort of environment or the character that they've created, and people love it. And you know, they're proud of that, and I think it's because they know they're making an impact. And so, I mean, even just things like, you know, making sure your team feels appreciated for the work they do, or when they do something right, to really make sure that they know they did it right, and to reward them for it in any small or big way that you'd like. And also, when they do things wrong, not to just, you know, I know it's stressful sometimes, but to say that, you know, failure is part of the process, as long as you learn from your mistakes and move forward and apply what you learn the next time around. I think that's really important. So, I mean, there's all part. Is there any specific part of the architecture business that you'd like me to explore? I mean, we could talk about, you know,
well,
the website.
I think that one thing I get very often, I'm a blogger and I do a lot of social media, and I see the return that I get from it, mm-hmm. mostly in relationship building.
Right, exactly.
But talk about blogging and social media a little bit, because certainly that has helped you get to you where you are today through blogging. You know, I think a lot of architects think that they might want to do it, but they kind of have, you know, some fear and they're not sure how to get started. And, you know, talk a little bit about how and why they should get started in blogging and be more active in social media, and what are the benefits from that?
Sure. Well, I mean, blogging and social media sort of work hand in hand with each other, and you know, the purpose of a blog is to share information or present information to people who are in your target audience. So your clients or people who could potentially become clients, and giving them the answers that they need, not what you think they would want to read, but just giving them the answers that they need. There's a really cool blog to follow called, The Sales Lion by Marcus Sheridan. And he talks a lot about his pool business. He had a pool business, and, he sort of revolutionized how the pool industry was as far as online and blogging. So he took people's questions and just answered them. Questions that typically other poolers would avoid or wait until that client sort of met with them to reveal things like the price. And so, you know, that helped people find him because they were searching for that information in Google, and he was the only one that was presenting or posting information about that. And so just giving your clients the answer they need, taking what you know from the previous relationships that you had and the clientele that you've had, and trying to figure out what the most common questions were, and putting that information on your blog, that helps in a number of ways. One, it helps you to be found. Two, it helps people who come to you with those questions again. You can just give them that link instead of going over, you know, the whole spiel again. And secondly, if it's really good and it's something, you know, sort of newsworthy or new, perhaps, that is something that is shareable. And that's where sort of social media comes into play. Social media is a great way. It's great for a number of things. One is to help spread awareness of your content and what you're doing between networks and people who are following other people and things like that. So there's sort of viral quality. But I think what's really cool is the ability to just connect with people on a one-on-one basis in a really easy way that can take that relationship to the next level. And so I use social media a lot to just have quick conversations with people who are in my target audience to show them, A, that I'm a real person, B, that I'm, you know, hopefully somebody friendly that I can connect with, and also C, that I'm somebody, you know, trustworthy. And, you know, people will remember you if you have conversations with them, especially, again, if you surprise them. A lot of companies use social media sort of as a strategy to connect with people individually, but also to just really impress them. I know, gosh, there's a number of different examples where I've tweeted about something about a company, and you know, I'd say, oh, I had a terrible experience at Chick-fil-A or something. You know, they forgot my chicken nuggets or whatever. And then they would tweet me back and say, oh, well, we're so sorry about that. Here, you know, go, give us a call or call a manager, and they'll hook you up with a free something. You know, that goes a long way. And that's a great way that they sort of rebounded from that initial mistake. Yeah, so it's just a great way to, again, put yourself in front of your audience and actually engage with them. You know, I mean, I think that's even quicker and easier and sometimes more appreciated than the phone nowadays. You know, people aren't always able to pick up the phone, or they're on their phones for different reasons than actually talking on the phone. So tapping into them where they're at, which is on social media, and actually developing a relationship with them there is definitely a smart thing to do. That'll help you stand out from everybody else that's out there. And then if we were talking about earlier, you know, just checking in every once in a while. I mean, how awesome would it be to be working with an architect and getting a tweet every once in a while just saying like, hey, we did some awesome developments on your project today. I can't wait for you to see it. That would make me so excited.
That would be very helpful. Yeah. Those are great ideas. I think that would be very helpful to a lot of people listening.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, everybody's on social media, so you should be too, but not for selling purposes, but for,
I think architects are traditionally slow to adopt technology, and I think they're slowly coming around and understanding the importance of it. You know, I even with websites, they were slow to build websites, and now I think they're slow to get on the bandwagon with social media. But I think they'll get there. I think it's an important piece of the puzzle. So I appreciate you with being
the
with
websites
us today. Yeah.
Yeah, I could talk a whole hour about architecture websites. Maybe we could do that another day.
Yeah, I'd love to have you come back and talk websites. That would be great. So thanks for being here today. I appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me. And, you know, this was such a pleasure talking about my history. Like, I have never talked about it in a while. So.
Yeah, good. Is there any place specific that you'd like people to go visit to contact you and say thanks?
Yeah, if you go to patflynn.me, that'd probably be the best for your audience. You can see some of the things I have going on there. I have a podcast as well, just past 4 million downloads. Some episodes may or may not be useful to you as an architect, but you know, it's there. You can get my book, Let Go, there as well, and there's a contact form if you want to come and say hi.
Yeah, and I highly recommend the podcast to every architect. I'd listen to them from the first one on to the last one, because you may not want to get into the internet business, but every podcast has some actionable advice, some inspiration. I highly recommend. And this podcast, the Entrepreneur Architect Podcast, was brought to fruition by watching some of Pat Flynn's videos on YouTube of how to put together a podcast. So I thank you for that. And I recommend other people, anybody who wants to put a podcast together, go do that and watch those videos. Those are really helpful.
Awesome. Thank you, Mark. I really appreciate that.
You're welcome. So thanks for being with us today. Appreciate your
time.
Thank you. All right. Have a great day.
You too.
So I asked Pat to be on the Entrepreneur Architect Podcast for a very specific reason. And it's not that he has such an inspirational story, or even that he's making $50,000 per month, although that's pretty cool. What I want you to learn from Pat's story is that opportunities come from unexpected places. And if you work hard, and you stay focused, you make connections, and you live with certainty that you will succeed, then you will succeed. I'd love to know what you think of this episode. Please send me an email at mark@entrearchitect.com. Or catch me on Twitter @EntreeArchitect. And I'd like to thank Pat for being on the podcast today and for taking time out of his busy schedule to maybe inspire a few architects that may be in the same position he was not too long ago. You can find out more information about Pat Flynn at my website at EntreeArchitect.com/episode7. My name is Mark R. LePage, and I am an entrepreneur architect. Thanks for listening.
Imagine earning continuing education credits while doing exactly what you're doing right now. Well, you can. Gable Media has revolutionized the way you earn your continuing education credits with a groundbreaking approach. Forget running around town and scouring the internet for credit-worthy courses. Fulfill your CE requirements effortlessly by listening to engaging podcasts just like the one you're listening to now. Our podcasts are designed to educate, entertain, and inspire, all in a user-friendly environment. But wait, there's more. Architects, Gable Media is also approved as an AIA Continuing Education Services provider. Upon completion, we handle everything, from reporting your hours directly to the AIA to storing your certificates in your personal Gable Media profile for your self-reporting needs. So follow the link in the show notes and start earning your credits in the most innovative and entertaining way possible with Gable Media.
Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast, it's a community where dreams meet action.
There's a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. So for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill, is most important. And so I would say, like, that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success.